podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, and welcome to another Media Matters special for Anfield Index. It's quiet in one way, you could argue, ladies and gents. It's International Week, but off the field, there's still many things to talk about. It feels like we're in the eye of the storm, doesn't it, before the fixture madness commences, which we've got to talk about as well. And here to join me, and we're going to put him on the block this week, big time in terms of his thoughts, ladies and gents, is the renowned and the respected as ever, David Lynch. David, international break, how are we?
Yeah, good. It's nice to have a bit of a break from the sort of, you know, it's really full on, isn't it? Sometimes when they get particular, because Liverpool have been basically playing every midweek and then weekend for the past few weeks. So nice to have a little break from it all. I actually managed to get away over the weekend as well. So now it's back into it, isn't it? And sort of head down and focus on Liverpool. So yeah, it's exciting though. It's stuff to look forward to. But yeah, nice to have a break ahead of the real madness starting and hopefully a couple more trophies to come.
Yeah, that's been a nice break, but it does feel like the real business stuff starts now as well. And I mean, speaking of business, largely we're going to start talking about off the field as well, because I know you wrote a piece about it as well, and it's probably been the biggest story. So I do kind of want to break these down one by one. Richard Hughes is confirmed as a sporting director. If people do want to believe, like we said before, that he's going to start work on the 1st of June, I'll leave that to them realistically, but there has been quite a lot of detail. I know you'd written a piece about this, because there'd almost been the thought that Richard Hughes is this almost an Edwards old pal act type of thing, but he has actually got quite a CV that stands up as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, even on the surface of things, you know, even without going sort of into in depth on the piece that was written, I think, you know, I think the surface level stuff looks good. I think Bournemouth's recruitment, they do punch above the weight. There's no denying that. I mean, you look at a team like them with an 11,000-seater stadium that's managed to pretty consistently stay in the Premier League. They did get relegated, but almost immediately bounced back to, you know, two seasons in the Championship and then straight back up. So, you know, clearly they're getting some decisions around that correct. And then, like I say, even the surface level ones, the one we all know about, you know, Dominic Solanke is turned out to be a great buy, which even at the time people said, you know, the money, and he made a bit of a slow start, but he's since proven to be a great acquisition. They would make much more money on him if they were to sell him tomorrow. You know, Nathan Ake is another one, a really shrewd acquisition. And then I look at some of the other signings they've made. I like that Kirkez they've got, who's playing left back, looks a really, really smart signing. Utara looks good. Senesi, you know, I could list a load of players at Bournemouth who you think, wow, they've done really good, done really well to sort of get them in, because they are a higher value than they paid for them. They're clearly Premier League level players. So, you know, I think even surface level, their recruitment looks quite good. And then, you know, you hear about some of the stories then that, you know, you get told about that some of the signings they missed out on down the years that they've liked, you know, players like Joe Gomez, they were in for him at the time, Harvey Elliott, you know, competing with Liverpool for players of Liverpool quality. And, you know, it is kind of hard to judge, isn't it, around sporting directors sometimes, because you don't hear about as much the failures and the ones that they went for that would have been really shrewd acquisitions. So kind of nice to get an insight into those. And that gives you an idea, really, that along with the stuff that we do know that Bournemouth have pulled off, that they've consistently looked at the right type of player, which is players that are undervalued and that can be really good Premier League players. They've consistently looked in that area. So, you know, that suggests to me that, you know, very much Richard Hughes is got a similar mindset in terms of around recruitment as Michael Edwards. And so not just coming into it because he's his mate, but also because he thinks about recruitment in the same way, and he's got a really good eye for a player. And, you know, we can make too much about the idea that, you know, that okay, he's coming in to be the new Michael Edwards. And I think too much is made of Edwards and his player ID. It's not just one man picking players. That's not what is good about Richard Hughes. It's the methodology that leads him towards identifying these players. And he buys into doing things in a very similar way to Michael Edwards. And that is all Liverpool fans want, really, and should want, really, in my opinion, is because it's not reliant on the genius of one man or, you know, him, his ability to pick out players. It's all about the idea that, like I say, they buy into the methodology, and that will then consistently get you the right players. So I think that's really encouraging.
Yeah, definitely. And as you said, Bournemouth, who really have been punched above the weight, it almost feels like FSG might just save themselves time and buy Bournemouth the second club, because the new one coming off the block is Mark Birchall, Chief Football Scout. Now, there's quite a few sort of suggestions of what role he'll take, because people have mentioned Hunters and Fallow and the structure. Do you think there is anything to that in regards to Mark Birchall coming to Liverpool?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, some of the reports, I've not had the inside track on this one, I must admit, but I obviously read some of the reports from the journalists we all respect, and seem to be suggesting that Dave Fallows and Barry Hunter will stay in their position. So he's not coming in to sort of rival that. So he's going to fit somewhere in that structure. Be interesting to see where. But again, clearly it's another figure who, you know, in much the same way with Richard Hughes, he's got a similar mindset around recruitment. He obviously believes in how they're going to do it. And for him, you know, great step up to go to Liverpool as well. So that would be really exciting. So, I think, if Richard Hughes is willing to bring him in, he obviously thinks about things in the same way. And so he's obviously going to find a place for him in that structure. It's going to be interesting to see exactly what that entails and where he does sit in that, and whether he's below, Barry and Dave in terms of how that recruitment's set up. But again, you know, you've got to think that it's a smart acquisition on the basis that he clearly thinks about football in the same way as Richard Hughes, same way as Michael Edwards. And if they're on the same page, then you're going to get, you know, clever recruitment, which is what Liverpool have been all about down the years.
Yeah, and in a great way, it does seem like that's what they're setting up for, linked with Will Spearman, everyone's role. Yeah, the key people in the key positions, as it were. So, yeah, we'll await developments on that front as well. And international week, you know, David, some people like it, some people don't. I mean, I'm going to be honest, I sit on the fence of, I don't watch internationals. I just pray Liverpool don't get injuries more than anything like that. I'm actually quite happy when our players don't play. For yourself as a journalist, are you looking at the games more, or is it a case of just keeping an eye out from Liverpool points of view more than anything?
Yeah, no, just checking in terms of injuries a lot of the time. Sometimes watch England if it's on. But like I say, I've been away this weekend, so not paid attention so much football at all, if I'm honest. But I think, you know, there are sometimes, you know, if they do all avoid injury, and fingers crossed that is the case, because Liverpool don't need any more, but there can be upsides to it. You know, Cody Gakpo, by all accounts, just reading this morning, got a couple of assists against Scotland in a 4-0 win. He probably needed that confidence boost. You know, he's getting a lot of criticism at the moment. Some of it, I think, very unfair, actually, but, you know, that will help him go away, play with a different team, get a couple of assists, hopefully gets his confidence back up and he can come back and have a strong finish. So there can be upsides to it. You just hope that Liverpool feel all of those and hopefully none of the downsides, because to be honest, they've been quite unlucky around international injuries in across this entire season, really. So hopefully can kind of avoid that, because they've earned a bit of luck on that front, I'd say.
Definitely. And the best news for me, and I know you wrote about this, so I did want to almost double check it, that Salah's not gone for the Egyptian friendly. That was good news. He was rehabbing. Sensibly, Uruguay made the decision not to take Darwin Núñez. So I think if I'm right, I read your piece, that the expectation is that he's back for Brighton at the coming weekend as well. Endo had a game cancelled because of Japan, Korea, Republic game cancelled. So he'll be back early. I mean, those are positives. And then at the same regard, and I'd be interested in your take on this, Harvey Elliott, there's a lot of claims to get him in the senior England squad because his form. That's the last thing I'm looking for, a young Harvey Elliott to be going to the Euros and playing minutes over the summer. How do you stand on that type of thing?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, in terms of the other players and having them back, I think that's really helpful, by the way. I mean, especially your forwards, I just think that, you know, the amount of running they do in closing down, and so it's so prone to, you know, sprinting after balls. It's so easy to get hamstring injuries. And Endo, another one, you know, the way he plays the game, really, really handy that he's not playing those international fixtures. So that I think is great news. But on Harvey Elliott, I think I don't know. You know, I talk to him quite a lot in the mix zone, and I know some of his family, and I do sort of look at that and think it would be kind of nice for him to get the call up from that personal level. I know it's something he would like, and I feel like he deserves it. I find it bizarre, to be honest, that Kobbie Mainoo has got a call up ahead of him, because I think, you know, Mainoo, don't get me wrong, I think there's real clear talent there, but in terms of the position he plays, he's got a lot to learn. I think in terms of that, you know, if he's going to play him in that holding role, he's not really ready to contribute at what England think their level is or hope their level is at the moment, I would say. Whereas Harvey Elliott, I think he's absolutely ready to contribute in his position. I suppose the difficult conversation you have to have around that is you know, who does he come in for? And that's, I suppose, a quite a difficult one. But I'm surprised that Harvey Elliott's played the amount of games he has for Liverpool at the level he has, and he's not been in and around the England setup. As you say, there's benefits for Liverpool in that, in terms of it's not tiring him out, you know, lesser chance of injury if he's maybe involved in that intense level, and he can go down to the under-21s and thrive there and probably finds it really easy.
Yeah.
So that's nice for his confidence or whatever. But I would argue that he probably does deserve an England call-up, and I think it's crazy that he could go on and win the Premier League this season, maybe, you know, add that to the League Cup and hopefully Europa League as well. And he maybe won't be in the England squad for the tournament this summer. And I find that absolutely crazy, really. And I think if he played for a different club, maybe probably wouldn't be the case. In fact, it's probably likely as well that because Curtis Jones has had this poorly timed injury, that he doesn't go either, which, I look at England's midfield on paper and just think that, you know, I'm not mad on England. I don't know loads about it. But, you know, if you were to have Rice, Curtis Jones and Bellingham, that to me on paper sounds like the most perfect midfield setup. You know, a holder who's playing really well for Arsenal at the moment, Bellingham absolutely flying for Real Madrid as your attacking one, and then Curtis Jones as an in-between, as a facilitator. And yeah, I probably don't expect that he'll even be in the squad, which again, playing most weeks for a team that's doing what Liverpool are this season. And same with Harvey Elliott, is just... yeah, crazy, but there's benefits for Liverpool, as I say, and I'm sure those players will get recognition eventually, whether that's after Southgate leaves or whatever, we'll have to see, but they definitely deserve it, I would say.
Yeah, and it is a mixed one, because you could see, like, Jurgen Klopp's talked about it, and Joe Gomez, you could see in his interview, was so proud about being there, but again, say, you know, Curtis Jones would love that, be great for them, but I'd just be like, please don't get injured. That's all I'd be looking at realistically. So I get the split in a way that way. And I suppose another player I wanted to ask you about, because I know you actually in the summer were the one really who got the scoop on Fabio Carvalho before he went to Red Bull. Obviously, it proved a bit ill-fated with everything that worked out. Quite a few interviews he seems to have given this week talking about his relationship with Klopp, what his aims are going forward as well. And, you know, he's got some lofty aims from his interview. There's no two ways about it at all. Do you think there is almost a future long-term for Carvalho at Liverpool, or might it have to be somewhere else, do you think?
I think there's more of a chance now than there was, you know, maybe 3 or 4 months ago before we knew about the Klopp news. Absolutely. I think that's key. I think Klopp couldn't find a place for him in his setup. And that's totally fair, by the way. I, you know, that's not a criticism, because I don't think... in the way that Klopp teams play football, he doesn't quite have the physicality for midfield at the moment. And also even on that, you know, he's not either got the pace for the wide positions either. So it's kind of been a struggle to think where he would have played. And that's why Jurgen had that conversation with him over the summer and said, there aren't really games for you here. I mean, in terms of his going to Red Bull, that was very much sort of driven on the player and the agent side. Liverpool would have liked him to go somewhere else, maybe a move within England, in fact, similar to what he's ended up doing. That was what Liverpool kind of wanted for him. So he pushed to go to Red Bull, and obviously it worked out pretty horribly in the end. But I still think he's showing that he's a really good player now. He's made the right loan move in the end. And as I say, there could still be a future for him under a new manager, because it could be easier in a different system, a different setup to find a place for him. It's kind of interesting, actually, around the time he was looking at his loan move over the summer, someone said to me, it was a sort of close to situation, that it'd been kind of said to Carvalho, look, go out on loan. There might be a kind of different situation waiting for you when you got back. And when that was said to me, I kind of dismissed it at the time and didn't really think anything of it. And you think now with everything that's happened, that is exactly how it's played out. There was a very much a different situation playing out for him. So, you know, when he returns, he didn't necessarily need to make that permanent move in the summer. He will maybe get another chance under a new manager. So, kind of interesting what you hear at the time, and didn't think anything of it. Maybe I could have been early on the Klopp scoop there, but It's an interesting one. And I do think there is a chance for money comes back because, as I say, new manager, new system, new setup. So, you know, maybe there is a chance he's got to keep playing well on loan and have a strong finish to the season and then do well in pre-season. But we know he's a talented player. Liverpool didn't sign him for no reason, did they? So, you know, every chance he comes in and stakes a claim.
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no-obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit LibertyShield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
Yeah, we'll be interested to see. It's almost like you said, he was never quite felt quick enough in this system to play in the front three, maybe lacking the physicality, and almost in a strange way against his pal Harvey Elliott, who has clearly gone on a level as well. So yeah, maybe regular football might do something for him. And probably the big story, I'd say, and the one that's, you'll probably notice it, it's caused a lot of furore with Reds. And understandably, I mean, whenever we have these chats, I know you're the one who brings the balance on the referees when I'm thinking a different thing, and the fixture list when we saw those changes for April. I mean, 3 games in 6 days, all the way, finishing with a 12:30 on Saturday. With the way the calendar looks now, can you understand why there is that furore or a bit of upset around the fan base?
Yeah, I mean, what's annoying, that's really annoying when you get a Wednesday evening kickoff into a 12:30, because that whole thing happened, didn't it, around that not happening in the Champions League. Jürgen kicked up a fuss, BT or TNT as they are now changed exactly how that worked. And yet the Premier League seem intent on putting Liverpool in that sort of same amount of turnaround. So that's really frustrating. There's, you know, no getting away from that. But they don't make the fixture list to try and do Liverpool over. I think, you know, the getting picked in the 12:30 slot is, you know, Liverpool are attractive for broadcast. There's not a lot you can do about that. They're a big club and this is part of the territory that comes with it. They've got a big squad, so they can rotate. So anyone who's taking this as a death knell for the season should maybe calm down a little bit. You know, I think that Liverpool can get through that with making big changes, particularly as the squad is getting stronger now with people coming back from injuries. So you can get through. But I agree, it's frustrating because, like I say, you know, you wouldn't get that in the Champions League, doing a Wednesday evening kickoff and then into a 12:30 on the Saturday. It wouldn't happen anymore. They've changed the rules. So, you know, maybe Liverpool or other clubs should be lobbying the Premier League to make sure that can't happen in Premier League fixtures as well, if it's such an issue. The upside is that the away game they've got on the Wednesdays is Everton, isn't it? So not a lot of travel around or any travel around that, you know, literally across Stanley Park. So that's kind of helpful, I suppose. But yeah, it's not ideal, and they probably won't be particularly happy about it. And they maybe hope that Arsenal can get through the Champions League and they get a bit of luck with that, so that the West Ham game moves to the Sunday as well. So we'll see how that one plays out. But Liverpool, look, it's going to happen. They've got the squad to maybe get through it, or we'll hope to. So, you know, it's a challenge, and one they'll be relishing, and they'll think they can get through as well. And one thing I will say, actually, in the 12:30s, they're really annoying after an international break, because you see with the likes of McAllister, Nunez, you basically can't start them. They're ruled out because it's not feasible. If they played a game on a certain day, the turnaround's too tight. And in fact, we saw McAllister, was it Wolves away this season, where he was disastrous. He was so poor. So they basically rules out, you know, really key players. So, but when it's not after an international break, I actually think sometimes 12:30 can be helpful. I think it dulls the atmosphere when you're away from home. You know, it makes it a little bit less testing in that sense. They're not great when you are at home and you need the atmosphere, but away from home, you know, they can go to West Ham in that 12:30 and think it's going to be a little bit quieter than usual. You get an early goal, probably kills things completely. So, they can, you know, there are some upsides in there. I always try and look for the positives, and maybe that's one of them.
Yeah, and I suppose on positives, and obviously it was a bit horrendous the way it worked out before the international break, but actually going out of the FA Cup and not having to find that, could that be a bit of an advantage still? I know there's a sort of condensed period, but there will still be a midweek gap, as it were, at some point.
Yeah, it's just one game less, isn't it? You know, you've got to take that upside, absolutely, having that one game less in the semi-final. I know the final itself would have come after the Europa League final if Liverpool were to get there. So, you know, we maybe discount that. But even then, I think that would have an effect on what your lineup for your final league game is, what your lineup for the Europa League final is, you would have to think about it, because there's no way you could have used the same team across those three games. And that is something else to factor in. So it is, you know, it is taking two fixtures out of the list potentially. And as you say, awful way to go about going out the FA Cup. But, you know, it's absolutely, it can be helpful. And we know Liverpool have been in this situation before where they've gone for all four competitions and it's got really, really difficult towards the end of the season. Yeah. So to lose two fixtures is, you know, it can be a bit of a blessing in disguise and can be helpful in terms of, as you say, there's at least one free midweek there where they've not got a really difficult Premier League game. So that can kind of be helpful and hopefully it provides that little extra physical boost they need towards the end of the season to get them over the line.
No doubts about it at all. It does look congested, but we will see soon enough how that all works out. And the other thing that keeps coming up off the field is Xabi Alonso talk's been raging for a while. It seemed like the odds-on favourite. The name Ruben Amorim, the Sporting Lisbon head coach, does seem very much in the last few days to have been mentioned by a lot of people that comes round. I mean, I know you've always said that it would be Alonso that you'd lean towards. Do you think there is anything in this Amorim chat? Do you think it's almost Liverpool could be sort of hedging their bets? Because Bayern Munich have even started talking now about wanting Alonso, and now De Zerbi's come into the mix, hasn't he, as mentioned publicly. Do you think that could be the case? Liverpool are just looking at the options.
Yeah, I mean, I think I mentioned Amorim when we first heard that Jürgen was leaving. I think he's absolutely nailed on to be on the list. The one thing I would never agree with is the idea that he's ahead of Alonso. I think if Liverpool can get Alonso, they will, because his achievements at the moment this season are ridiculous. He did a good job at Real Sociedad B in terms of actually improving them as well, even if that's in a sort of lesser environment. So there's no doubt in my mind that Alonso will be the front runner and the main choice, but Amorim will be up there. I think he'd be number two behind him. That's my belief and understanding, because I think if he can't get Alonso, whether he prefers to stay at Bayer Leverkusen for another season, prefers to go to Bayern Munich, then Amorim will be the one that's in behind him. And I think, you know, not a bad second choice if that's where Liverpool end up, because he's, you know, achieved a lot on a budget relative to his rivals in Portugal that isn't as big, and plays a proactive style of football, is a young manager, exciting. So ticks a lot of the boxes. So I think he absolutely will be in the mix. You know, no surprise to hear that being talked about, but I do expect Alonso to be the number one choice, and hopefully Liverpool can get that one over the line. But if not, you know, they've got alternatives. They've got a backup there.
It was what I wanted to ask you, because, I mean, you were quite clear with the sporting director and the change of the structure when you expected that to happen. It was pretty much dead on with the timeline. This seems a lot more difficult just because we're Leverkusen Sporting, we are, and everything. Like, when would you think all fans should expect a timeline to sort of start formulating or things to start? Do we have to wait till the end of the season, do you think, on this?
I just think it's going to maybe get to the position where if Leverkusen aren't competing for something with Alonso, or, you know, say they get knocked out of the Europa League and the league's wrapped up with a couple of weeks to go, then that's when you're going to start seeing firm moves. I think Liverpool are going to be very cautious of, you know, moving too early, particularly when they could face Bayer Leverkusen in the Europa League final. You know, that's on the cards, isn't it? So, you know, they've got to be careful about how they do it. No doubt there's talks going on behind the scenes, getting in touch with agents. That absolutely can happen. But in terms of moving towards firm talks, I'd be really surprised if anything happened before the end of the season, or before Bayer Leverkusen's season is over, so to speak, because it's just about respect, isn't it? And also, you know, you don't want to be providing that distraction or look like you're acting disrespectfully in going too early for things. I know, you know, I'm sure Alonso will know that Bayern Munich are doing a lot of talking in the press about the situation. Yeah. And surely that cannot be helping them. I don't really know why they're doing that. If the point they're trying to make is that they really want Alonso, I think Liverpool will make that point privately rather than do it in any other way. And so I expect that really to sort of move towards the end of the season. And as I say, whenever Bayer Leverkusen are sort of, you know, finished up their season, then they'll make a firm move, I expect.
It's different, that German culture very much, that sporting directors, people at Bayern on the board speak out on names, don't they, and links like that. Even Plettenberg, like a big German journalist, has said that Bayern are favourites for him ahead of us, but then has also this week mentioned De Zerbi being looked at as well. So it does seem like a constant whirlwind around it. It will be one to watch, and yeah, interesting to see what happens there. And the final thing I wanted to ask, almost, it kind of links to on the field, but off the field as well. Stefan Bajcetic has been teasing us all this week on his Instagram. There's loads of photos. He looks quite muscly again, muscled up, doesn't he? Back in training on the pitch more than anything. Hoping, naturally, that it was talked about, but we've not seen a single photo of Curtis Jones yet back at, you know, at the AXA or training, anything like that. We're hoping Gravenberg is good to go. Is that kind of the latest injury news that we have? We're expecting Jones and Grav back for Brighton and just wait and see with Badge. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, with Bajcetic, I mean, even if he comes back to full training after the international break, and maybe there's a possibility of that, I still think it's going to take time for him to fully get back up to speed or be in the mix for anything. I mean, really, between now and the end of the season, you're hoping, you know, could he maybe start one Europa League game and be in and around, sort of, you know, being an option off the bench in the late in games to sort of help see them out and just give some rest to players. I don't think he's going to be like a bona fide option in sort of starting games in central midfield. So, but we, you know, obviously great to have him back. And with Curtis, yeah, I still think the expectation is to get him back for Brighton. I mean, you know, in terms of not seeing anything, I think by Bajcetic, they were just on his personal Instagram, weren't they? I don't think it was anything from the club yet. So still think that Curtis will be in and around that. And obviously Gravenberg back on the bench at Old Trafford. So that is great to have him back as an option. So Liverpool already immediately after the international break, starting to look a lot stronger, and it's a good time of the season for that. And, you know, Jota and Trent not too far behind that Brighton game as well. So, you know, Liverpool looking in far better shape at the moment. And that is good news, because you've got a crazy period coming up and a lot of very, very important games, and every single player is going to be needed. They're going to have to rotate through this period. So having as many options as you can in every position is going to be absolutely massive.
Yeah, Trent and Jota could come back. That's a massive boost, isn't it, in time for that United game or around then anyway. That would be huge. So, yeah, there we go. Even in a week of internationals, there's been a lot happening and a lot suggested off the pitch. And a couple of special sections we're going to get into now with David. So the title race, we've kind of alluded to this. I mean, we're in this final bit. It's the eye of the storm. The fixtures are going to start coming thick and fast. I mean, people say with 10 games left to go, that's when the race starts, don't they? And I know you said previously that you felt City were the favourites, but, you know, it really could go close. It's too close to call in that regard. I mean, looking at the fixtures that are left, we've talked about 3 in 6 days potentially. Is there any ones that you look at and think that could be a sticky one, or one that you just keep your eye on, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean the one I'm really concerned about, obviously, United and Everton away for Liverpool, because they're not easy places to play well at. You know, their crowd will always be up for it. You know, Liverpool saw, didn't they, at Manchester United recently, that they can lose there. Everton again, you know, seen so many nil-nils there down the years where Everton have been able to keep it tight and frustrate Liverpool. So again, expect that kind to be difficult. But the fact is, they're probably all going to be tricky, aren't they? Because there's so much on the line at the moment. I mean, I look at Brighton and Sheffield United at home, and again, I'm probably just saying this out loud now and just cursing Liverpool, but you know, that's not a bad start, though, those back-to-back. Nope. That's a good way to get back into it. But I think everything after that and those 3 games in 6 days, as you say, that's going to be really testing, going to require a lot of rotation. It all looks difficult when you look at it like this, really. And it's just a challenge, isn't it? The hope is that the other two, their fixtures can be tricky as well. And there's difficult moments for them in there. So it's all going to be a test, but looking forward to seeing how Liverpool approach it and how they rotate through it, what the squad looks like from game to game, because it, you know, Jurgen Klopp has proven in the past that he's very, very good at getting through these periods. I mean, I had a look at sort of, I'm previewing a YouTube video I'm going to do actually today about the running and how it looks, and Jurgen Klopp in terms of his average for picking up points over the last 10 games is, you know, way ahead of, he's got a better average than Guardiola and actually than Arteta's miles behind as well. In fact, I'll drag these up actually. I'll give you a little preview of this because I do think it's interesting. So, so this is over the last four seasons, basically their average over the last 10 games of each of the four seasons, and Klopp has got the best with 24, Guardiola's 23.5 and Arteta's 16.5. So
wow.
Klopp's got the advantage there in terms of the average. So, you know, maybe that suggests that puts Liverpool in a good position, yeah, no matter how difficult the fixtures are, particularly when you consider that Liverpool have had some horrible seasons in those past four seasons as well. So, and still managed to do that. So definitely got a manager who can get them through this period by picking up a lot of points, and they're going to have to, aren't they?
Definitely. Even in the horrendous season last season, we did finish quite strong overall. I know it wasn't quite enough to get in the Champions League, but it did feel a strong finish. I mean, looking at that in terms of positivity, and even in terms of positivity, that it's not just a parade for City and Arsenal with the fixtures they've got. Is there any ones that you look at for them and thought, when you were looking at the research, that could be a bit sticky or difficult for them?
Yeah, well, they've both got Spurs away, haven't they? Which I think is a tough one. Liverpool know that. Well, I say Liverpool know that. Liverpool would have won that game if they hadn't been hit by the officials. But still, that can be a tricky one. I think Spurs have been really good this season. Obviously, Liverpool have got Spurs themselves, but it's at Anfield where you would really back them. So that's a really tricky one for them. I still think, you know, there's a few tests in there, but, you know, Brighton away, both of them have got, again, is a really difficult one. And it's so handy, isn't it, that you know, they've got each other next week, and that can really put the title race in Liverpool's hands. That is massively helpful. So, yeah, you know, no easy games in there. You know, Arsenal, as I say, a test for Arteta in terms of can he finish the season strongly. He hasn't typically done that at Arsenal, and particularly when the pressure's on. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be really tight, isn't it? It almost makes you think as well, you know, with City being such strong finishers in general, would you take Arsenal winning that game on the basis that they'll probably drop points elsewhere and City are probably the likeliest to finish strong? So, yeah, it's an interesting one.
Yeah, next week it even starts, doesn't it? Next Sunday. And then, like you said, there is tough games for both sides, and we hope they meet each other in the Champions League, because that just maybe takes their eye off the ball there as well. So, yeah, we'll have a lot to see in those title race and the fixtures. And the other thing we wanted to do is a special section, a bit of a caveat awards, as we're calling it, for this one. So we know the biggest part of the season is still to come, so things could change in regards to how we see players, the teams, things like that. No doubts about it at all. But we did want to get David's take on who he thinks are the players of the season today, the young players of the season today, even if we were looking at a team that was going to play the biggest game, who we would have in there. So we'll probably start with that in mind, David. So right at the top, as it stands now, in almost the top three sort of shortlist, if you want, the top contenders, who would be your top three contenders, should we say, or player of the years as it stands right now for Liverpool?
Yeah, so I think my top three for this is, I'll just say the three and then maybe we'll talk about it if there's an order. But I think for me, Alexis McAllister, Virgil van Dijk and Mohamed Salah. Now, with McAllister, obviously, I just think he's had an unbelievable impact. I didn't think he was... I knew he was a very good player and I really enjoyed watching him at the World Cup. But I thought, you know, the challenge of playing for Liverpool is a step up. It's a different style of football than he'd been playing at Brighton and with Argentina as well. So, you know, seemed like it... To me, always, I thought of him more as a sort of Guardiola-type player, really, in terms of the style of football. But he's really taken to this aggressive style of football. He's... You know, one of the best pressers in that Liverpool midfield. He's so good on the ball as well. And I just like his character and everything about him. I think he's just been, you know, just such a good addition in terms of he brings everything you want him to bring into, as I say, character and quality and just a great fit in the squad in general. He's just brought all that real winning mentality as well. And that always helps when you bring in a World Cup winner, I suppose. But He just really surprised me in the way he's fitted in so nicely and the way he's played this style of football. And I think he's, you know, at the moment, I almost describe him as Liverpool's most important player in terms of, I just think if he's having a good game, Liverpool are playing well because he's in that central area, he can dictate things and they'd massively miss him if he was out. So fingers crossed he stays fit between now and the end of the season. And yeah, he's just been, yeah, a brilliant, brilliant debut season from him. I really enjoyed watching him play.
Salah and Van Dijk, would they be ahead of McAllister just now for you? I know there's a lot of the season to play, but if you were sort of picking one right now, would they go ahead of McAllister?
Yeah, so I'd probably put McAllister in third, I think, because I think these two have been just slightly more important than him in terms of, you know, I say McAllister most important in terms of general influence on games from game to game, I think he is. But in terms of overall form on the season, I think these two are just ahead of him. And I would maybe put Mohamed Salah in second because of the injury. He's missed some games, hasn't he? And I think that is, you know, it's not his fault. And I'm not saying that, you know, he can't do anything about that. But I think he's very much, you know, he's still, regardless of that injury that he's had, he's still been unbelievably influential. I think for me, you know, I'd almost say just out and out the best player in the Premier League in terms of, you know, you look at his goals and assist numbers and where he's sat now, despite the fact he's missed so much football, he would be at the top, wouldn't he? Yeah. I think, you know, he would have scored more than Haaland scored. I think he would, if he did not miss so many games, I think he absolutely would have assisted more as well because he's much more involved in the game than Haaland is. You know, Haaland can have a really quiet game and score a hat-trick, whereas Salah, I think, can score that hat-trick, but he's involved in everything good that Liverpool do. He's a far better footballer than Haaland. That's, you know, it's not criticism of Haaland, who's absolutely magnificent, by the way, but I just think Salah is a better out-and-out footballer. He provides a lot more in his general game, and I think, you know, he's absolutely doing that. And the only thing that, like I say, it marks against him is, you know, this season, it maybe not being my number one pick is the injury that he's had. And if he played more football, his numbers would be even more impressive. And as I say, I believe he's probably the best player in the Premier League in those terms. And yeah, been absolutely wonderful this season. And then that obviously leaves Van Dijk as my top spot. And that is because I think he's, you know, after question marks around him last season, has absolutely got back to his best. His influence on Liverpool's ability to play the high line, his organisation around everything else, and then just the sheer class he shows in everything he does defensively and on the ball. He's a brilliant leader and a great captain. He's already won a major trophy as Liverpool captain, hoping there's a couple more to come. Just everything you wanted him to be in terms of stepping into that void left by Jordan Henderson and got back to his best on the pitch as well. So, yeah, just a phenomenal player, a pleasure to watch, and a truly, truly great Liverpool captain in this early stages we're seeing so far. Hoping there's many more memories to come for him.
Hey guys, it's Eddie Gibbs from Anfield Index here. I hope you're enjoying this podcast, and I'm sorry to call time on the show before it ends. In the current climate, it's tougher than ever before to offer podcasts for free. At Anfield Index, we produce over 75 free shows every month, which I'm confident is unparalleled in the LFC sphere. Whilst we'd love to offer everything for free, the production costs now make this impossible. That said, we don't want to follow the model of other channels and lock all of our content behind a paywall. So what we've decided to do is to continue offering every show for free, but cut that offering to 30 minutes on our longer shows. So to get all of our shows in full and enjoy the best of everything we have to offer, we really hope you'll consider supporting the channel and signing up at AnfieldIndexPro.com. For about the price of one cup of coffee, you'll get every podcast in full with zero ads. You'll also get access to our LFC VIP community, where you can enjoy live podcasts, engage with our podcasters, and chat with other Reds in real time. So that website again, AnfieldIndexPro.com. Join today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.